Welcome to a special Wednesday edition of the Daily Fantasy Basketball Podcast. I'm your host, Mark Roberts, and today's podcast will be focused on rookies and their rest of season value. Joining me to help me look at those rookies is the king of fantasy basketball himself, Josh Lloyd. Josh, how are you doing?
Mark, I prefer that you reference me as your highness.
I'm sorry. We'll have to edit that out.
I'm hardly the king, Mark. You're the one sitting in the throne at the moment.
Yeah, well, I'm glad that you would come join me on my dinky little podcast at this point.
Please, your podcast is right up. We know everyone loves Mark's podcast. You're putting out some ton of information. The guys that you've had on, Tyler and Daniel and Mike, have been putting out some great stuff with you over the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, and JJ too, of course.
Oh, JJ, yes.
Yeah, our friend. No, seriously, though, I'm really happy you're here. I'm sure people are excited to hear what you have to say. And I hardly feel like I have to tell people where they can find you these days, but you want to just remind anybody that has been living under a rock for the last 2 years or something where they can find your work?
They can find me at basketballmonster.com. You can find my stuff on hardwoodparoxysm.com. There's redrockbasketball.com. And I think that's probably about it. At this point, obviously on Twitter is redrock_bball. And, I think that covers it.
Yeah. So Josh and I are going to talk about the rookies. Just as a programming note, we are taping this on a Saturday night. It is going to run on Tuesday night, Wednesday morning. So if anything catastrophic happens to a rookie between now and then, and we sound like we don't know about it, that's because we don't.
We're okay at predicting things, but we can't be all that specific 3 days in advance.
Yeah. No drastic injury. I mean, if Porzingis breaks his leg or something, we don't know about it yet. So we might have to record something if something drastic happens. But I think the nature of the conversation we're going to have today is sort of a season long look at things. It's not so time specific that we can't approach it this way. And, this will be the last podcast of the week for the Daily Fantasy Basketball Podcast as we head into the Thanksgiving holiday. So I hope you have a good time listening to this, and then also a good holiday in your future. You guys do Thanksgiving in Australia, Josh?
No, we don't. No, I completely forgot that Thanksgiving was coming up, so that means there's no basketball for us here at the end of the week.
Is that true? There's Thanksgiving basketball, isn't there?
No, there's not. On Thursday, there's no games.
Oh, man. They've totally...
Because I remember last year,
football,
I had the week off last year. I had the week off from work. I went away, came back on the Wednesday here. I came back on the Thursday, and I was okay. Back, I'm not at work. I'm gonna sit down and watch some basketball on Friday, which is Thanksgiving over there. Turned it on, no games. What's going on? And then it finally clicked. I'm like, okay, Thanksgiving, there's no games. Great, got this time off from work, ready to watch these games, devour it all. Nothing happening.
Yeah, so
I had to watch football.
Yeah, stupid football takes over. It's like the one day football is okay, though. All right, before we get into this, Josh, I just want to – we haven't really touched base since the season started. How are you feeling about the season so far? It seems like as far as recent memory, it's been one of the funner ones, in my opinion.
Yeah, it's definitely been a red-hot start with so much stuff happening. There's always storylines in the NBA, and things are always happening. But the way that this season started, I feel like there's been just a ton of – good stories and great play and interesting things to talk about as well, of guys improving and guys struggling, just a whole heap of stuff happening.
And pretty much every Warriors game at this point is a must watch.
It feels like a playoff game every game, even though they end up destroying teams. It just feels like everything is on the line every game. And I don't really know why that is when they're just blowing teams out, but maybe it's just the fun factor of it.
Yeah. I think the pressure is kind of building up as they continue to not lose games.
They're a chance to lose against Denver, I reckon. Now, obviously, we're recording this before that game, so you're listening to it after it, but I reckon there's a sneaky chance they lose at Denver. Heading to Denver with the altitude, they've had a couple of close calls. I reckon there's a sneaky chance that they might let one.
Well, Josh, you just led into an interesting thing that I was going to save this for a little later, but I think with that little tip there, I think this might be the right time to bust this out in the podcast. Nobody else knows this but you and I, but we have a new sponsor on the podcast. And the reason I'm saying nobody else or everybody else knows this, I guess, but you and I, because we're recording this again early, but we're running this late. So we'll have talked about this twice already, but this is the first time I've actually talked about it. Happy to welcome BetDSI as a sponsor of the podcast. And very excited to welcome them. Now, BetDSI is an online sports book that focuses on their customers and most importantly on ease and speed of payment, which, you know, what more, how more can you focus on your customer than making it easy to get your money? BetDSI is one of the most well-respected online sports books. They currently have an A+ sports book rating. So the other cool thing is they offer a wide range of sports. So, you know, obviously NBA, NFL, but also, you know, Josh, your country's sport isn't it? Is it rugby?
It is. I have no time for rugby whatsoever. It doesn't get played.
Well, I'm not worried about what you're looking at. You're an NBA guy, but I'm wondering, like, what's the average guy at the sports bar watching?
Where I live, it's not rugby. It's Australian football.
Oh, okay. I didn't realize those were different things.
No, they're very, Mark. That's blasphemy. That is blasphemous. If you go to the northern states here in Australia, then they're all about rugby. The southern states, the western area of Australia, that's all about Australian football. And we don't have a huge amount of time for rugby down here.
I see. Well, you can bet rugby. I'm not sure about Australian football. It might be on there. Surfing, politics. You can bet on who's going to win the Democratic and Republican nominee. So a lot of fun things. Now, you mentioned an interesting, I got to look this up now. You're thinking Denver Golden State. Oh, the line actually isn't up on that one yet.
They're waiting on my opinion to put the line up, but obviously they're not going to hear it 3 days after, so they're probably not going to win. I don't know what they're waiting on. Like, who's doubtful to play?
Yeah, who are they waiting?
Kenneth Faried's questionable with an ankle sprain, so maybe they're looking at Kenneth Faried, but to be honest, it probably helps Denver's chances if Faried doesn't play.
Whoa. Interesting. Why would you say that?
Not a huge Faried fan.
Well, that's just personal preference then.
Yep.
All right. Well, when that line does come out, you can take a look at it, or any line really. I was actually looking at the futures earlier today. I want to get your take on this. So Golden State is basically an even money line at this point to win the Western Conference Finals. Would you say that's intriguing to you or not intriguing to you?
I would say it's pretty intriguing. At this point, you look at the other, Houston's terrible. The Clippers are struggling. The Spurs are up and down. The Thunder haven't been fantastic.
The Thunder, like, I think the Thunder, as everybody was thinking, was going to be the big challenger in San Antonio and the Rockets. And you're right. The Rockets are a mess. The Pelicans aren't being frisky. Like,
the Grizzlies are terrible.
Yeah, the Grizzlies are terrible. There's only like two or three good teams in the West right now. It feels like, I don't think between Durant's injury and the coach they've got over there, they're going to be a serious challenger to Golden State. I just can't imagine. No. Even with all the talent they have, I don't see them being able to compete with Golden State.
No, even money for Golden State for the Western Conference title it feels like a really good bet, because I mentioned this on my show the other day that the East has got a winning record against the Western Conference this year. And if everyone who just piles on the East is terrible, the East is terrible. They've won more games against the West this year. Yeah. The West has not been great at times, and there's a lot that'll probably even out, and the West will probably be better by the end of the year. But, you know, we're over 10% through the season, and the East is beating the West by 4 or 5 games.
Yeah, it's starting to even out. I mean, there's really only, you know, those couple of teams we mentioned, and then like the Clippers, but I don't think the Clippers are going to give them any trouble. And no. I think they were 2-1 favorites. Like, you get double your money if Golden State wins the title, which I don't think is a horrible bet either.
No, not at all.
So the best part of all this, Josh, is that just by listening to this podcast, you can get a free bonus at BetDSI just by signing up. So if you go to BetDSI.com, use the offer code HOOPS10, that's HOOPS, then the number 10, no space. They'll give you $10 to play. So you sign up with the promo code, and then a couple hours later, they'll send you the money. So if you want to have some fun and put a couple bucks on Golden State to win it all, I think this is a pretty good opportunity to do it. And just lastly, BetDSI and myself want to remind everybody that gambling is just a form of entertainment and should be done responsibly. In fact, BetDSI is they're so sure they want you to be responsible. They make an easy way to track your activity and results so you can make sure nothing's getting out of hand. And if you feel like you have a gambling problem, please contact Responsible Gambling for assistance. So thanks to BetDSI for being our new sponsor here. Thanks for talking a little futures odds with me, Josh.
Not a problem at all.
I think the Cavs were like a negative 250, which made me feel like there's
50 means really, because we don't use that sort of odds here, but I think that's about two or three to one, isn't it?
I think what that means is you bet a dollar, and if you win, you get like 40 cents.
Okay.
You get your money back. Plus, so you're not even like Golden State being even odds is basically like you bet a dollar, you get a dollar, you win $2. Okay. With the Cavs, you bet a dollar and you get like $1.40 back if they win.
Oh, yeah, that's not great odds.
No, it certainly seems like something could happen over there. Although I don't know who I would tab as the favorite if it's not the Cavs.
Maybe it's the Knicks. I don't think it is, but they're definitely a lot better than last year.
Yeah,
they look like they'll be tough to keep out of the playoffs. The Knicks.
I think so. There aren't that many bad teams in the East. You kind of alluded to this when you were talking about the East versus the West. There's really just the 76ers, and isn't there one other team that's doing bad? And like everybody else is above 500. Yeah, Brooklyn obviously is bad. Bucks are the third worst team right now, but you kind of feel like they've got enough talent to put something together.
Yeah, definitely. They're a little bit worrisome at the moment. The Bucks, they just can't seem to get anything going. The Magic just dropped under 500, but yeah, I think they've got the ability to turn it around as well.
Yeah, but both of those teams are not terrible, is all I'm saying. There's only like two terrible teams in the East.
Yep.
And then there's a lot of interesting teams beyond that. All right, let's talk some rookies, huh?
Yep, let's get into it.
So what I want to do is just go through the top 10 players, or if we have time to do the top 10, maybe we'll just do the top five. Talk about how their season's gone so far, because a long time ago, before the season started, you and I gave some predictions and some guesses on the rookies. As both of us do projections, this is sort of the hardest part, right? Like, we know what LeBron James is going to be each year. We know what Kevin Durant's going to be if he's healthy. But the rookies are certainly the unknown. So we gave our guesses. Now we have the hindsight, a little bit of like 10 games. We want to talk about them again, and then see where we think they're going for the rest of the season. So I don't remember a lot from our first podcast, but I do remember us telling everybody like Karl-Anthony Towns isn't a normal rookie. He's going to be one of the best rookies of all time, and he's probably going to end up as a top five fantasy player in a couple of years. Is that?
Yeah, I think
I'm not joking. Yeah, it sounds like I'm being facetious here. I think we literally said all of those things.
Yeah, I can remember I said it plenty of times on many different podcasts that by year three he'll be a top 10 guy, almost no doubt. There's a slim chance he's a top 10 player by the end of this year.
Crazy thing is we were too low on him.
I know we were. I had him about 55 or 60, and I went, oh, you know, it's a rookie. Big men might not get rookie. Big men don't normally get big minutes. He doesn't even need big minutes. He's averaging less than 30. He's averaging a double-double, 2.5 blocks, like insane percentages. His game is so fantasy friendly that we knew he was going to be an awesome guy. That, you know, I thought, yeah, third year, top 10. He should be a top 10 guy by next season. And if he finishes in the top 10 this year, it's not a complete shock.
He might be there's a very good chance. I think maybe more likely than not, he's a first round pick next year.
I would say, yep. I would say that's pretty likely. And back into the first round at pick 9 through 12, I reckon that's, you know, we're obviously speculating a lot, but that's the sort of spot that you're going to be looking to get him, I would say.
Now, here's the crazy. I mean, I think I've talked about this a number of times where I have a similarity score where I look at per possession numbers and look at who historically a player has been like. And Karl-Anthony Towns has basically broken my similarity scores. Because there's just nobody in. So here's what he's done so far on a per possession basis. He's shooting 52% from the field, which I totally didn't expect. I expected him to be about 5 to 6% lower than that. He's shooting 91% from the free throw line. He's grabbing 17 rebounds per 100 possessions, 4 blocks, and averaging 27 points per game. So there are a few guys like Chris Webber and Shaq, and I think, let's see, maybe Sean Kemp, who are close to those rebound and points numbers, and some in some cases even the blocks numbers. But there's just nobody that has hit those percentages or anywhere close. So, like, my similarity scores, and some are trying to put like Brooke Lopez and some other players up there close to him, but like there's just nobody that is. He's doing something that nobody has done before, is basically all I'm saying.
Yeah, exactly.
I can't find a similar player in like the last 30 years that is even remotely close to what Anthony Towns is doing right now.
Yeah, and he's having a better rookie season than what Anthony Davis did. And they compare, you know, fairly similarly as terms of what their playing style is. You know, big points and rebounds guys, you know, big shot blockers. You know, good percentage guys, but he's exceeding Davis in a number of those areas. Like, he's shooting better percentages than what Davis did as a rookie. His overall production is better.
He's blocking more shots. He's more rebounds. He's more points. Like, I'm looking at the two seasons, and that is probably like my statistically his most similar season is the Anthony Davis rookie season, but it's better.
Yeah, it is. It's significantly better as well. And that's something that, yeah, as good as Davis was, that you didn't expect that Towns was going to be this good. I couldn't have thought that. Yeah, and this is a situation, and this happens with rookies all the time, is during their rookie season they get better. Like, they will get better through January, February. Like, that's when they really start to be good. And he's a top 20 player in the first month, in the first 3 weeks. He's this good. He hasn't started off shaky. What about when he actually gets used to it and he gets good? Like, what's going to happen then?
It's unbelievable. Like I said, the only player that I can find in my database that's anything close to him as far as just a points, rebounds, blocks is Shaq's rookie season. But, you know, Shaq didn't shoot 90% from the free throw line.
I don't think any big man shoots 90% from the free throw
line. No, and I don't think Karl Anthony Towns probably is either, like, eventually. But it, you know, like, imagine, like, Shaq, young Shaq, who could shoot free throws. Like, that's what we're dealing with here.
It's
preposterous.
It is. He gives the look of someone who's going to be unstoppable at some point.
Yeah. And I was talking to Tyler about this, like, watching him is like, and we'll get to this guy in a second, who I also love, is Porzingis is just, he's like a ton of fun to watch, but I'm not sure he's quite like, I think the next step for Porzingis is getting the point where he helps his team win.
Yep.
I think Karl Anthony Towns is already there. Like, he's already making the right basketball play. He's already, I think, just like, rookies aren't like that, but I feel like Karl Anthony Towns is already at the point where he's a big reason that they're not at the cellar in the West. Or I think he's a big reason they've won 5 of their 13 games so far and not, you know, in the tank like the Lakers or the Pelicans.
Is he the Timberwolves' best player already?
Oh, yeah. I don't think it's close.
Yeah, I agree. I said, before the start of the season, I put out a tweet saying who will be the Timberwolves' best player. Will it be Towns or Wiggins? And shockingly to me, I think 80% came back saying Towns. I didn't expect that before he played a game, and 80% seems too low now.
It should be 100.
I should redo that tweet and see how people respond.
People call you crazy.
Yeah, that's true.
What are you asking for? But I mean, Wiggins is an outstanding number two, so that's going to be a fun team. So, what do you like? Obviously, like, I don't think any of the normal questions apply here, right? Like, I think he's a must own, he's a must start the rest of the season, even if the start, like, even if the 90% free throw percentage doesn't last or the blocks aren't quite this high.
There's pretty much no way he drops out of the top. There's no way. I can't see it. Something would have to go drastically wrong for him not to be a top 50 guy.
So, with that said, like, what are your expectations, or what are you looking for the rest of the season with Karl Anthony Towns? Or are you just telling everybody he's this good, like, trade for him if you can?
Yep, exactly. That's exactly what I'm saying. If you can trade for him, trade for him. And some people have still been able to pull off pretty good trades for him. You have to treat him as though he's a top 50 guy, probably even a top 30 guy. And if you can trade two, like, top 80 guys for him, I'd be doing it straight away. Some people might not believe in it, but I knew he was going to be good. I just didn't know he was going to be this good in it. And no, he's well ahead of where I thought he'd be.
No, when I was saying those things at the beginning, when we were talking about him, I wasn't trying to pat ourselves on the back. I was saying, like, I think you and I were as high as we could have been on him reasonably. Yep. And we were way too low. Like we were way too low.
Yeah. This guy's he's a first pick. He's going to be a top 20 guy. You don't lose credibility, but people go, just calm down. Like, we're not here to be fans. We're here to be objective. But still was wrong. There's no other way around it.
Yeah, it was too low. I mean, I think most people that took our advice still drafted him, which is great. I'm trying to think of some guys, like, I'm trying to pull up my rankings here to look at who I won, like, who you would maybe consider trading for him that would be surprising. Like, you would trade LaMarcus Aldridge for him, right?
Ah, immediately.
Yeah, that one's not even a hard one. All right, would you trade Hassan Whiteside for him?
That one's completely dependent on the way my team looks, okay. I think. But overall, I think I probably that's close to me. Yeah, that's close because Whiteside's probably a top 10 guy at the moment.
Yeah. What about Chris Bosh?
Yeah, I think I'd want Towns.
Yeah. What about Antetokounmpo?
Towns.
What about Derek Favors?
Yeah, that's close for me.
Is that the range? I think that's kind of the range, right?
Yeah,
we're both big Favors fans, I think.
Yeah, I'm a huge Favors fan. Yeah, definitely. That's the right spot, I think, is that sort of area.
So I don't know that you're doing yourself any huge favors if you're trading. I didn't even make that pun. That was a pun. I think that you're not getting a lot of value if you make that trade either way. But I think anybody worse than Derek Favors, I think if you trade him for Towns, I would trade Serge Ibaka for Towns.
Yep.
And you know, anyone below there, Vukovic or.
What about Al Horford?
That gives me a little pause. I'm not sure. I think that's Favors, Horford are kind of in the same range. Yeah, in fact, right now I'm looking at my rest of the season 8 cat rankings and they're 23 and 24. So I think they're the same to me. So I don't think you're getting a lot of value. I would do it just for fun. Like
just
to you have it's just fun to own Towns.
Yep.
I don't think your team's any better or worse off, but I think you're going to have a lot more fun watching Karl-Anthony Towns than you are Al Horford.
Especially we think that Towns will probably get better as this season goes on. I don't think we can say that Horford necessarily will.
No, he is what he is. Horford should be a Spurs player. Like he's underrated and he's good and he's not super exciting to own.
Except now that he shoots threes, you know, he shoots 2 threes a game. Where did that come from? For a guy that's been in the league for 8 years now, all of a sudden he's a 3-point shooter. That was weird to me. Like we saw it in preseason. Is this real? He's taking 5 a game. I think I've got to do something with it in the projections, but I didn't expect him to be just every game. It's just at least a three every game.
They ran up a last minute play for him to get a 3-pointer the other day.
It's amazing. And it's weird to me that a guy after this many seasons is just now I'm shooting threes.
And doing them well. Josh, we might have to cut some of that out about how excited we were about Karl-Anthony Towns. Because we just basically spent 15 minutes telling everybody how much we love Karl-Anthony Towns for the second time.
Exactly. That's fair enough.
All right, let's move on to this next guy. And he's probably a little more interesting because he's not nearly the historical anomaly that Karl-Anthony Towns is. D'Angelo Russell. I think when we talked about him last time, we had some red flags. What's your and that's before we ever saw him play a minute. Now that we've seen him play a few games, what do you think?
From a
performance standpoint.
In terms of red flags for him, I had a couple of red flags with Russell, and that was his lack of explosion and athleticism was a concern to me, and his coach was the other concern. Neither of those two things have changed. I think probably the coach is probably the thing that will change quicker than his athleticism and explosion. And we've seen when he gets some decent minutes that he's actually able to – he can produce and he can put up decent numbers, but they're not mind-blowing. I don't think that to me he's not a guy that they should have taken at pick 2. I was pretty adamant about that when it happened, when I watched him at Summer League.
Who would you have – because you sort of followed – you covered the Lakers kind of last year. Who would you have rather seen them take?
I would rather them with Okafor.
Yeah. And now I think you'd probably say Porzingis.
Yes. But still, I'd still have Okafor over him. Like, clearly, like, Okafor's been good. He's fun to watch as well. They've got no scorers in their front court, the Lakers now. There's obviously the concern about Randall and Okafor playing together, but Randall's not good enough that you have to pass up a guy like Okafor. And that's what bothered me. Now, Russell's had a couple of flashes, but it's just flashes. We've seen, Rondae Hollis-Jefferson have flashes yesterday. He went 13 and 11. Like, guys can have flashes. I just don't buy into Russell. I think he'll be a solid guy. I think that he projects as someone who will be, to me, he's like a Mike Conley, but worse.
So my similarity scores for him are rookie year, like Monte Ellis, Brandon Knight, Drew Holiday.
If he gets to be as good as Brandon Knight, I think that's pretty good. That's ahead of
we're talking about Brandon Knight in year 8, right? Or 7 or wherever he is now. I'm talking about he's similar to Brandon Knight in his rookie season.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. If he ever gets to Knight's level of where he is now, I think that's a win for the Lakers, but I don't feel like he's going to get there. To me, he hasn't shown me anything that changed my opinion on him preseason.
Now, he's only getting about 25 minutes per game. Do you think that's right for the rest of the season, or do you think he'll get more or less? Or I know I'm trying to make you guess what Coach Scott is going to do, and that's a hard thing, but do you have any sort of feel for that?
Yeah, look, I don't really know what your policy is on swearing on the podcast, Mark. So I've got to be really careful when I talk about Byron Scott. I don't know what he's going to do, because it seems like everything that is the logical move to make, you can pretty much bank on Scott doing the opposite.
Right.
So it's hard to know. His minutes have increased the last couple. He's played above his average the last couple of games. So that's something where I go, okay, yeah, maybe he's starting to trust him a little bit more. And I think that we'll probably see him push towards 27, 28. But not, I don't think that he'll be a 30-minute game. Look, we've got Jordan Clarkson playing 30, 31. I don't think that D'Angelo Russell is going to get close to the 30 or 31. I think he'll get an extra couple of minutes what he's doing now, unless an injury occurs, unless Kobe goes down or Lou Williams goes down and he's forced to play him bigger minutes. But now Scott has got just the worst attitude to so many things. It makes very little sense to me, some of the things that he comes out and says, and he doesn't just say them privately, he says them publicly as well, which again just speaks to his lack of understanding of the current climate world.
I'm more convinced than ever that Scott is the reason. Like, Scott is their method for tanking.
Yeah, that's probably accurate. So we want to keep our draft pick. Let's keep Byron Scott, and that's
exactly.
I think it's going to work, because some of the things that he says and does, I feel like they're deliberately scripted to make him seem stupid, because he couldn't possibly say some of those things and mean it, could he?
I don't know. It's really strange. It's really bizarre. So as far as fantasy value, what do you expect from Russell for the rest of the season? I feel like, at least in the majority of the leagues I play in, he's owned. I bet the owner is not happy about it. For those owners, do you think they should hold on to him, or do you think it's a lost cause? He's not going to have standard league fantasy value this season.
I think that he will towards the end of the season, but it'll only be like as a 12th or 13th man on your roster. So I don't think you hold on waiting for someone to become that guy.
Right. No, that's a good point. I don't think the ceiling is there either. I wouldn't hold on to him if you drafted him at this point, unless he provides you something very specific, which, even looking at its categories, I'm not sure there's anything very specific that I think he would be good at.
He's only 2.7. Like, what's he? He's giving you nothing that's good. Yeah, the 3 is 1.3, but you can find that from so many other areas.
Exactly. I don't see him turning around. The percentages are struggling just like we thought they were going to.
He's been good at turnovers, 1.6. That's all right.
That's not bad. Aside from the 3s, like, if you need a 3 and steals guy, I think his destiny this season is as a streamer to pick up in head-to-head leagues at the end of the week when you need 3-pointers and steals or something, and maybe some assists with it. But like you said, there's a lot of guys that can do exactly that.
Yep, I think that's about right.
All right, let's get over to the third pick, who you think should have been the second pick, Jahlil Okafor. I have been surprised by his play so far, but I want to hear your take on him before I get into mine.
He was a guy that I wasn't overly impressed with at Summer League. He gets his shot blocked so many times. Like, he did then, he did now. Like, Al Jefferson blocked him like four times, I think, the other day. He, much like Russell, he's not athletic. He doesn't have any explosion. He can't shoot. But he's impressed me with his ability to block shots himself. I didn't think he'd be a guy that was, you know, hovering around two this early in the season. His scoring has been really good. He's obviously leading rookies in scoring. His rebounding is probably not where I'd expected it to be. So he's been close to what we expected. I think that we'll see his field goal percentage start to go up a bit more. He's a bad free throw shooter, which a lot of people at the start of the season went, well, maybe he's not, because I think he was 80% through the first three games. He's dropped down now to 64, and he takes a few attempts. He's just going to be that guy. He's going to be a fairly one-dimensional, a really good offensive guy that can block some shots, but can be a bit slow. Looks like he might have, I don't want to say this, but maybe some attitude issues on the court, like motivational-wise. He just looks like he's just not into it. And I don't know, maybe that's just because he's in Philadelphia and he's just disheartened by it all. But, mate, you've been there 2 months. Just pick it up a little bit. Like, you haven't been slogging through it for 3 years. Just pick up the intensity a bit.
Yeah, think about how Hollis Thompson feels.
I think Hollis Thompson's just glad to be having NBA jersey. Customize himself.
That is a good point. Yeah, I have been very surprised with Okafor. I thought he would come in. I thought he would lead rookies and nearly the league in field goal percentage. And that we haven't seen that yet. That doesn't mean it won't happen. But I would have expected Towns to be at 47% and Okafor to be at 52%. And we've seen the exact opposite. I was very skeptical that he would get any blocks. I thought maybe his steals and blocks would be even and both be below one. He's so far been very valuable in the block shots category.
And he's saying down a bit though. Like, I think he started at 1.8 for the first couple of weeks. He's down now to 1.5. So it is reducing. Because I was like, he's getting two blocks a game. Like, well, this is not something that I'm predicting is going to keep happening. And it is starting to come down now.
And the rebounds are lower than I expected, just like you mentioned. So I think he's been like sort of exactly where I expected him to be value-wise, but not in the categories in the same places I expected.
I think he's limited. I don't think he'll ever be a top 50 fantasy guy, to be honest. I think he'll be that guy that's 55 to 75, around that area, but he just doesn't do enough. He's not going to get many steals. His free throw percentage is going to hurt him. His three pointers will never be there. He'll just be a Zach Randolph-y sort of player.
Yeah, that's what I predicted. It's entirely dependent on the blocks.
Yep, that's true.
If he can add that third category and if he can up his rebounds a little bit, if he can be 18-9 and have a block and a half, he's going to be pretty valuable. If he's 17-7 and a half a block a game, then, he's not going to be worth that much, particularly if he can't get that field goal percentage up. Maybe I didn't take into account how bad Philadelphia is, because I do think that's probably dragging it down a little bit. My most similar player to him is still the same guy that was in the preseason, Bryant Reeves. Like, that's still who I think this turns out to be a little bit. And that's not a knock. Bryant Reeves had some good seasons just because he had a flat top. Good NBA career.
Because he had a flat top?
I think people kind of make fun of him because he had a flat top and kind of like an ugly face, and he played for a terrible team, but he had some productive NBA seasons.
Yeah, he did.
Early career Antoine Jameson, kind of similar to that. Brooke Lopez again shows up as a similar player. Yeah, it'll be interesting. I think the blocks are what you're tracking. I think that's what's going to make a difference between him being what you're saying is like basically a below average fantasy player and somebody that's going to be a foundation of your team is really those blocks.
I think we can get him to 20 and 10 pretty quickly and pretty comfortably. It's like, what else can he do? What else does he provide? Does he get 1.5 blocks? Can he get a steal a game? Like, if he does that, then that's a lot better, but I'm just not sure.
When you say he thinks he can get, you can get him to 20 and 10 pretty soon. Are you saying this season?
Probably next season would be. I think he's probably probably next season. I think that he'll be a 20-point scorer by next season, I would guess.
Yeah, I actually think 20 is more likely than 10 at this point.
Yeah, that's it. That's fair enough, because he just hasn't rebounded the ball well at all. I think that will change to a degree, but we'll have to wait and see.
Yep. All right, let's talk about number four, because he in every other season, this would probably be our favorite rookie to talk about, Kristaps Porzingis. And this is a guy that we also were pretty high on. I think the narrative coming into the season was basically like, he's not ready. Like, he's going to need some time to transition. And I think that was so foolish for people, because he was playing in like the highest level overseas league there is. And so why wouldn't he be just as ready as anybody coming from the NCAA? It's not like the NCAA is that relevant to the pro game.
I think there's a lot of, from some people, there's a lot of, I don't know if xenophobia is the right word, but it's like, I've never seen this guy. He can't be good. Mm-hmm. Who cares if you haven't seen him? That doesn't mean anything. Because, you know, I was on record saying it plenty of times that there is no reason why this guy shouldn't start. And the only thing that's going to hold him back is that, much like D'Angelo Russell, his coach is a little bit questionable with some of his decisions. And the fact, you know, they were going to give him 25 minutes a game, that's fine. But once he gets to 30 minutes a game, it's going to be all over, because this guy, he can be that good. He can contribute in a number of categories. He's a points, rebounds, threes, blocks. And like Carl Anthony Towns, he's a good free throw shooter. His field goal percent is not there yet, but that's one of those things that's with rookies that happens a lot, though. They'll be really poor shooters and headed to January and February, and will start coming up 3-4%. When that happens, it's going to be fantastic for him. But you know, we were on record both as saying that there's people saying, oh, he's got to come off the bench, it's going to take 3 years. And it was just one of the most crazy things I'd heard over the preseason from people, that he's not going to be ready. Like, I don't know what people base it on.
There was just no, that he's a foreigner. Exactly. It's the flat top thing again. That's like the new market inefficiency. If you have a flat top, people don't. No, listen, like, I think the worry that I had, the only thing holding me back from saying, like, I think everybody has to draft this guy, is because I didn't know what the Knicks were going to do with him. I thought there was a real chance they were going to keep him around 20 minutes a game. I knew he was going to be productive. But, like, tonight, I mean, this probably is his career game so thus far, but played 36 minutes in a Knicks victory. He had 24 points, 14 rebounds, 2 assists, 2 three-pointers, and 7 blocks.
It's pretty good. I think I read somewhere that it's the only the second time in NBA history that someone's had a game with those numbers, at least those numbers. And there's also another tweet that I saw here for players 20 years or younger, for to go 24 and 14 with 7 blocks. There's only been one other player at 20 years, and this is excluding the three-pointers, one other player that do that, and that's Shaq. Shaq had a 30 and 20 game and a 38 and 16 game, both of those with 8 blocks, but he's the only other player who's been able to go 24 and 14 with 7 blocks at age 20 or under.
You give Carl Anthony Towns a couple of games, he'll get there, but
you think there's a big chance?
No, Porzingis has been awesome. I don't want to get into this weird place where we're comparing him to Karl Anthony Towns, because, again, Karl Anthony Towns is historically, like, great as a rookie. But that's kind of where that's where it's going, just because Porzingis has been so good. He's had his ups and downs, but on a whole, he's been awesome this season. What do you think this is going for the rest of the season, both minutes wise and production wise?
I think he has to get close to the 29 minutes a game. He's at 25 at the moment, not including today's game where he had the 36, but he has to push up to the 29 minutes a game. He's clearly the better option. Kyle Quinn's phased out of the rotation, which is strange to me. Kevin Serafin, Derek Williams, like, these are not guys who should be pushing Porzingis for minutes. Like, Porzingis should be getting 29 minutes a game. He should be, you know, along with Mallow, they're the two best players on this team already. He should be getting as many minutes as possible and really developing the future of this team. And he's, I want to hear Stephen A. Smith's take on this, to be honest. Get him on the podcast, Mark, because he was so anti-drafting Porzingis, and one of the more ludicrous comments of all time came from him. But, team's playing.
I'll pass. I'll pass. Stephen A. Smith, yeah. I don't want to talk to him about Porzingis.
But Porzingis is at a stage where maybe Melo's going to be out of his prime when this guy's good. Oh, forget about it. This guy's good. Like, he's good, and good is not good. Doesn't mean great. Good doesn't mean all star. Good means above average NBA player. He's already that. He's already an above average NBA player.
Oh my goodness! I didn't even think about Karl Anthony Towns making the All Star game.
Oh wow! Okay. He could. We have to vote for him.
I'm gonna be voting every day. I'm gonna. That'll be my new primary focus in life, is to get Karl-Anthony Towns voted in.
I want to get Kristaps in as well. That won't happen, but no. New York, Mark, never know.
You never know. So as far as fantasy, like what sort of stats do you expect Porzingis to be able to put up going forward?
I think that by the end of this season, he'll be a guy that's a 14 and 8 sort of guy. He's currently sitting at 12 and a half and 8 and a half. The rebounding, maybe that's not real. But the only thing I think is that Robin Lopez is one of those supreme box out guys. Like, yeah. He's not a big rebounder himself, but like Roy Hibbert, his teams always rebound better when he's on the court because he's just such an animal in there of just basically providing a shield for, and Porzingis is so big. He just needs a little bit of space. He can you know, yoink it from out of anywhere by putting his arms over. So him and Lopez together really helps Porzingis' value. I don't think it's a stretch to say that Porzingis will be a 10 rebound a game guy, but an 8, but he's a massive chance to be a triple one sort of guy, to average a 3, a steal. And he's already at 0.8, 0.8, 1.1. There's a massive chance that he becomes that guy who, and only two guys did it last season, and he could be one of those ones who does it as a rookie, and that is just supremely valuable.
Yeah, absolutely. So are we talking top 50?
Yeah.
Like an ACAC league?
If he gets his field goal percentage is currently sitting under 41. If he gets it to 45, which is a big increase, but it's not insane. It's not crazy. Then he gets 16. He could go to 16 points with that sort of percentage. 16 and 8 with 1-3, 1 steal, 1 block, 81%. I think that's top 50.
So I'm going to give you a couple more guys. We'll start it again. LaMarcus Aldridge.
I'm just not into LaMarcus Aldridge. I probably would have him over Porzingis just. But if I want factor and if I want improvement, then it's Porzingis.
What about our buddy Nikola Mirotic? You want him or Porzingis?
Ooh.
That's a
whole I would have to say Porzingis just, and it all, again, so much of it comes down to minutes, is we just don't know what the Bulls are going to do with playing him. Now, it was encouraging the last game with Mirotić when he got the 36 minutes in the game against the Warriors, and that's what Hoiberg should be doing because, let's be honest, Taj Gibson and Joakim Noah, not the most dynamic offensive guys out there on the team that doesn't have a huge amount of dynamic offensive players, but that might not be the case moving forward. Whereas Porzingis, you know, he doesn't have guys of the caliber of Gibson and Noah coming off the bench behind him. Like Derek Williams and Kevin Seraphin are not Joakim Noah and Taj Gibson. So his likelihood for minutes to increase is probably higher than what Mirotić's is at the moment.
Right. All right. Let's talk one more guy here. And then, let's see where we go after this. Mario Hezonja, number 5 to Orlando. He was a guy I was really interested in and took a flyer on in a couple of leagues. And I was so excited on the first night when they were playing him. They almost started him. They were running plays for him in crunch time. And then we really haven't seen him since then. What's your take on that situation?
That's because, Mark, you discounted Evan Fournier. And I've been riding the Fournier train for a very long time. It's coming to fruition finally. I wasn't big on Hezonja coming in. I just thought there's just too many guys there that have got to get minutes. Mm-hmm. And for as big a fan of Fournier as I am, I didn't expect him to be averaging 44 minutes a game like he's currently getting. That's a slight exaggeration, but not much.
Not much. He's
got the league in minutes, it appears, which is just it's insane. For a guy that couldn't get a solid starting role last season. The problem was that there's Harris, there's Aaron Gordon, there was Fournier, there's Oladipo, and all these guys were seemingly ahead of Hezonja in the pecking order. Now, there's always a chance that Tobias Harris gets traded, but I don't think that necessarily means that Hezonja is going to move into the starting lineup. Doesn't appear that Scott Skiles has got a huge amount of trust in him at the moment, and that apparently is the all you need in Orlando. Skiles needs to like you, and then you can get big minutes. No matter how good you are, it's all to do with if Skiles likes you.
Here's what I don't understand about that. So how many coaches has Fournier played for? Like 5 or 6 or 7? Like I don't – between –
last year and 2 – George Karl and Brian Shaw.
Was that all in Denver? So he's played for 4 coaches before Skiles. He hasn't been able to get any of them to believe in him enough to like give him a starting – like a solid role. I know he played a little bit at the beginning of the season last year, but he kind of fell out of favor. And then Skiles is the guy who doesn't believe in anybody. I feel like he's always, he's never picking, I just feel like there's so many people in Skiles' doghouse in his career. And so to blend those two together and then have Fournier leading the league in minutes is so surprising to me.
It's very weird. But have you watched much of Fournier this year?
Yeah. No, I mean, look, I liked him in Denver. I liked him. I picked him up last year when he played. It just seems like he always sort of falls out of favor with the coaches.
But I think last year there was he had hip issues, which kept him out of a lot of games. Down the stretch, he had a big hip problem. He had some injuries early in the season. Not saying that he was ever going to do what he's doing now, but at the start of last season, he was playing well. Then he had this hip problem that lingered a lot. He was a guy that always produced when he got big minutes in Denver. And I never understood what Jacques Vaughn was doing a lot of the time with his rotations. Not Fournier, like Mo Harkless and Kylo Quinn on a bad team. They couldn't get minutes. It didn't really make a lot of sense. But I never expected Fournier to do. But he looks different to me. He looks better. He looks like he can basically get wherever he wants on the court at any time, which is something I never would have thought I would have been able to say about Fournier. And that's a big reason why Hezonja is not able to get minutes. And even in this situation where Victor Oladipo is getting benched, Hezonja is not getting the minutes there. So I don't think there's really any chance that he becomes a standard league relevant guy this year.
Yeah, and I think that's where we're going. What have you, and maybe you haven't paid enough attention, if that's fine if you haven't. What have you, like, in the limited time he's gotten, are you seeing anything that you think would be interesting if he got minutes? Or I guess what I'm asking is, if he got minutes, do you think he could be fantasy relevant or not quite yet? Like, more in the, is he more in the Porzingis camp, or is he more in like the D'Angelo Russell camp?
No, he's more in the Russell camp. There's just no defensive stats from him pretty much at all. He doesn't contribute there. He's going to be a points and threes guy until that other stuff starts to develop, which it will, I think, in a few years. But at this stage, he's going to be more of a specialist three-pointer guy if he was to get 30 minutes a game. And yeah, that doesn't make him all that exciting.
And I always say this, like, because I always throw in points in these sort of situations as like, well, he'll be good in points and threes, or he'll be good in points and steals. Really, like, if Hezonja played enough minutes, he would be neutral in points. What do you think? Like, he might get, what, 12, 13, 14 points? In a standard league, that just means he's not hurting you. I don't think he would be good enough to be like Jahlil Okafor level of points where he's actually providing you some value there. I just don't. So I think basically he'd be good at three-pointers.
That's a great point. I mention this a lot of the times when I'm talking about Aaron Aflalo. He's a good scorer. Yeah, but he gives you 14 points, which is actually below average. And it's helping, it's hurting. So it's not, and when he gives you nothing else, if he gives you nothing else, he's got to average 19 points. He's got to average 18 points. If you have nothing else, well, then you're still a net negative. And that's, you know, I think that will be what Hezonja would do. He's got to get up to big scoring numbers, and he just doesn't provide in those other areas enough to be worthwhile.
Yeah, unfortunately. I had some high hopes for him, and maybe he'll eventually get there. It'll be interesting, like you said, exactly what Orlando ends up doing.
Yep.
Because they just, I don't know, they don't have it, like, they have too many pieces, but also in a weird way, not enough pieces to be like a playoff team, but they have too many good players. Like, if you're not making the playoffs, then you need to play your top five pick that you have a lot of hope for.
Yeah, I don't think Skyler will do that, though.
Yeah, so they're in this weird place where they might not make the playoffs in the Eastern Conference, which is better, but it's still the Eastern Conference, and you're not one of the best top teams in there, but you're not able to play, like, you're not playing Aaron Gordon starters minutes, and you're not playing Hezonja starters minutes, and those two were both top five picks from the past two seasons.
Yep.
Like, it just is a funky grouping of players if you can't play your top five guys and you can't make the playoffs.
Yeah, exactly.
It's just really strange. Josh, I see on your podcast you've started getting into the No Halftime.
Correct. They have they've joined my podcast as well.
I presumably played a little bit. What's your take on No Halftime so far?
You know what? I played today, and I was pretty happy that I was able to take a challenge where somebody had Dwight Howard as their guy. So I just took every single challenge that I could against the people that had Dwight Howard, considering Howard didn't play. So that was some pretty easy money. I was pretty happy with that.
I think the people at No Halftime are so nice that I think you're just going to get a refund of your money. I think when somebody doesn't play because of injury, really? I think they cancel the challenge.
Oh, that's disappointing. Well, I was taking on all these Dwight Howard challenges. Yeah, he's not playing. I don't care who it is. Tim Duncan or Dwight Howard? Yeah, I'll take Tim Duncan. Even if he doesn't grab a rebound, it's gonna be better than zero than what Howard's giving us.
Well, see, there was one day where Tyler and I were trying to be a little bit of scoundrels and recommend people target, like tell their friends to go target, to challenge their friends on players who are injured and see if they can get them to take the challenge. But no halftime, they do everything above board there. So they make sure you can't pull off shenanigans like that. So I don't think they take any money from you, but I think you just end up back with where you started.
Otherwise it's been good. I've played a few challenges on there and I've come out in front so far. So it's a good start.
Yeah. I kind of like it because I mean, I've said this a million times, but like the days that I can't play daily fantasy, I like daily fantasy. I just don't have enough time sometimes to like fit eight guys that I all like in my salary structure. Like it sometimes just gets too, I don't know. It just gets too cumbersome or like too time intensive, but we were messaging the other day, like, hey, you want to challenge this guy versus this guy? You want to challenge this guy versus this guy? And I think that's the fun of it, is you can believe in one. You only have to believe in one guy. I can challenge my one guy versus your one guy. And I'm thinking by the end of the podcast, we can find two rookies that we want to pit against each other. Or maybe it's my guy versus Fournier or something. But like, it's just so much fun. I found it to be so much funner with my friends to just say, hey, I would play this guy versus you're this guy, instead of like, why don't you go set a lineup and make sure it fits within the salary cap. I'll set a lineup, make sure it fits within my salary cap. And then we'll challenge each other. And because I always feel like even if my four or five guys that I relate did well, it's those other three guys that it's totally reliant on the other three guys I had to throw in to make my lineup work. And if they do good, it's great. And if they don't, then it's like, well, those aren't even the guys I liked. I really like the idea to just say, hey, I like this one guy. You like this one guy. Let's see who figured that out better.
Yeah. And the speed of it's awesome as well. Yeah. Just like do it. Yeah. There's no hours and hours of research required, as you mentioned. So, you know, I've been impressed with it.
Yeah. It's a lot of fun. Like I said, we'll get a challenge before this podcast is over. They're super easy to set up. So if, you know, say we wanted to do, I wanted Carl Anthony Towns, you wanted D'Angelo Russell, which we can do that if you want.
I'm good.
You'll pass.
Yeah, I'm good. Thank you.
I might be able to talk you into it by the end of the night. But so if we want to do that, I can set up a quick challenge, email it over to you, and it takes you like 1 second to accept it. The best part of everything of all this is, Josh, is if the listeners go to the No Halftime, download the app on iTunes, they receive a bonus $25 just for listening to this podcast. So when you go sign up, enter the promo code BBALL, that's BBALL, and you get those bonus $25. You can challenge me, you can challenge Josh, you can challenge your buddy, and it's a lot of fun. I think, like I said, I've said this a million times, but it just is... I think a lot of the fun that daily fantasy sports was, at least at the beginning for me, it sort of brings that back. And it's just, you get to watch one guy, you get to challenge one of your buddies, and see who comes out on top at the end of the night. So go check out No Halftime. That's where the fantasy sports season never takes a break. And if you listen to Josh's podcast, you can also get some No Halftime advice as well.
And yeah, listen to my podcast and you can get a separate code for another $25.
Can you stack those?
I don't know. I hope so. I've just said that. I hope
I'm going to try that. I'm going to go into mine and see if I can get an extra $25. Or if you like Josh better and you want to support his podcast more than mine, you can go to listen to his and find his promo code too. So, which I would, you know, personally, if I was listening to these two podcasts, Josh, I'd use your promo code. So
stop.
I wouldn't blame anybody. All right, let's talk quickly, like just a few second quick hitters on the other guys in the top 10. You can kind of give me your take on whether you think, if you're a little bit interested in these guys or not interested in them at all. So number six was Willie Cauley-Stein. What's your short take on Willie Cauley-Stein?
Don't like it. Didn't like the pick when it happened. He's been okay, but this is literally zero
more playing time than we expected.
Yes. Yep.
I'm still not sure.
Big minutes though.
Yeah. So you're not like, I guess my main question with any of these guys, besides Moutier, who we'll talk about next, is are you rostering any of these guys in hopes that things turn around for them or that like they get to a point where their fantasy value? And what would you say with Willie Cauley-Stein?
You'd have to rely on an injury for, you know, a long-term injury to Kufos or to Cousins for Cauley-Stein. And even then, what's the best that he gives you? Barely top 100 value? It's not worth stashing for that sort of situation, I don't think.
Yeah, his per 36 numbers so far this season, which he's never going to hit 36, but he's not, you know, he's averaging 9 points per 36 minutes.
Yep.
He's done okay in steals and blocks. He's not going to be good enough in rebounds. Like he's like a Nerlens Noel super light, I think.
Yeah, that's fair enough.
And Nerlens Noel is kind of a funky player to own anyway. Like it's not totally easy to have him, to fit him in your roster. And I think the same problems exist, but are worse with Willie Cauley-Stein. All right. What about Moutier? He's been probably the most interesting rookie so far. I think
he's just destroying you in roto leagues with percent and nine cat in turnovers, just destroying you. But if you're in a head-to-head league, and you're aware of those problems, which you should have been. If you listen to us talk in the preseason, look, you should have been aware that these are going to be issues. He's going to kill you in these areas. He was outside my top 150 for roto leagues. He was inside the top 100, I think, for head-to-head leagues. You needed to be aware of these problems. And if you were aware, then he's doing basically what we thought he would do. He looks really good on some nights. Sometimes he looks bad. But that's just a typical rookie situation for me. And I think he's only going to get better. Hopefully the percentages change, but don't bank on it.
Yeah, that's definitely the talking points we had. But just like with Karl-Anthony Towns, I don't think we were even prepared for how bad the percentages were going to be.
And the volume is huge.
He's just been, like you said, he's like actively trying to destroy your rotisserie league team at this point. But the assists are great. The scoring is getting there. The threes are higher than I expected. The steals are there. The blocks have been higher than I expected by quite a bit. I don't know if that's something he can continue, but definitely a classic head-to-head, not roto league guy at this point, I think.
Oh, definitely. Yep. I can't see how you can own him in roto at this point.
And I don't see that turning around this season. Do you? I mean,
yeah,
it's sort of a shot in the dark, I think, at this point, just because he's still an unknown, but I don't expect him to shoot above 40% from the field. What would you say his over under is for free throw percentage? He's at 66 right now, I think.
If he gets it over 72, I'd be surprised.
Yeah. And what do you think a reasonable level of turnovers like for the rest of the season is?
He's at about 5 at the moment.
He might be.
Yeah, 4.4 is close. If he gets it under 3.7, I'd be happy with that.
I was going to say 4 is probably what I would expect. So especially in a 9-cat league, you can't do that.
Yeah, exactly.
With the level of protection. All right. Stanley Johnson.
Looks gave us a lot of hope at the start of the season, struggled early. Starting to get the minutes coming back a little bit more now. If I'm stashing any of these guys who aren't, you know, probably top 120 value at the moment, he's the guy. He's the guy whose minutes have got a chance to come up. Look, Marcus Morris is getting a lot of minutes, but it's not like he's doing a huge amount with them. Mm-hmm. So look, 40 minutes to score 12 points or 14 points or whatever he's doing, which is not all that efficient. I can see Johnson becoming valuable at one point, but I don't think that he's going to be that good that I need to, you know, make a play and stash him.
Right. When he is good, like when he's rosterable either this season or next season, what categories am I looking at?
I think scoring and steals will be probably the two bigger areas for him. I think they're probably his two best mm-hmm. places that he can help. Like he'll be able to hit some threes. He'll be a decent rebounder, but again, like other rookies, he's been shooting the ball pretty poorly as well, both from the field and from the line, and only 26% from three as well. So he's been struggling with shooting, but it'll be threes and steals over the next, you know, this season and next season that'll be his main calling card, I would say.
Okay. Number 9, Frank the Tank Kaminsky.
He's looked a bit better lately. He's put up some decent numbers with Cody Zeller out, but the fact that Cody Zeller is there and Marvin Williams is there, it's going to limit his upside for this season. And I don't think there's really any chance for him to have standard league relevance this year. Although if he does play the points, the threes and the blocks, and the rebounds and the percentages could be useful. So he's in that state where, look, if Zeller goes down long term, if Marvin Williams, you know, becomes Marvin Williams, then and he gets minutes, then he's going to be fantasy useful. But I think there's a lot of steps. There's a lot of ifs there in that sentence.
Yeah. So here's a question for you. If they got the same level of playing time, do you think he would be better than Okafor?
I think it'd be close because he's able to diversify his stats over more categories.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was hoping you would say. I think he is interesting just because of the categories he can give you. Obviously, until he starts playing consistently over 24 minutes a game, I don't think in a standard league you can do anything with him. But I think that just shows you like the important things that you need to look at in fantasy. Okafor is, I would say, clearly the better player in real life, but because he's limited to value in just a few categories, and Kaminsky can give it to you in a lot of different places, that's why it's even a discussion at this point. And rounding out the top 10, Justice Winslow. He's been an interesting guy so far because he's gotten so many minutes and he's basically done nothing fantasy relevant with him.
Yeah, and that was a concern I think that we had at the start of the season as well, is that, look, he'd have some minutes as the backup two and the three. He was never going to be the starter and play minutes over Wade and Ding, but well, what does he do that's good? I think that's still the concern. Like, what does he actually do at a high enough level to make him, you know, interesting? Like, in daily fantasy, he's playing 30 minutes and he's, you know, minimum salary. And you can put him in a tournament and think that he's going to go. Maybe he can get 10 points. Maybe he can get 8 rebounds and that's enough at minimum salary. But for standard leagues, it's not. And I don't really see he's not doing anything well enough where I get. Look, he's rebounding looks good, but he's getting 29 minutes a game. So he should be doing more than 7 points and 5 rebounds in 29 minutes.
Yeah. My most similar player for him at this point is Otto Porter's rookie season.
And that wasn't a good rookie season.
No, that was not. For anybody that held on to Otto Porter at that point or that season, hoping that he would turn around. Sort of the opposite with what we just talked about with Frank Kaminsky. Like, I think he probably plays meaningful minutes for the Heat this season in the playoffs. Very good defender. Like, the fantasy value is not there yet. He hasn't figured out how to get us enough production in enough categories to be useful. And I don't see that changing.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. I don't think there's any point in stashing him in, even in 14 team leagues. It's a little bit of a stretch.
Yeah. All right. We're outside the top 10 now. So I think we're just going to hit on a couple of random players. I think the most interesting one at this point is TJ McConnell, who has been a top 100 player thus far. I think because he does some interesting things on the basketball court, but also because he plays for our Philadelphia 76ers.
I think that's pretty accurate. He's getting 29 minutes a game. He's averaging 6.5 assists, 5 rebounds, and 1.2 steals, which is all really good. But the concern with him is you've got two guys coming back who are going to play his position. And everything that I've heard from the Sixers is that it's going to be Kendall Marshall's job once he gets back up to speed. So McConnell's a guy you have to own now. But in January, we're going to be saying TJ who, I think.
Yeah, that seems to be the consensus. I'm still holding out hope of, like, I think TJ McConnell is doing a lot of what they want Kendall Marshall to do. Yep. So why would they make the change?
I understand that, but I also think that Marshall's probably a better player than McConnell. I would much rather have McConnell in there than Tony Roten. You know my disdain for Tony Roten. And I think that he's the better option for them than what Roten is. But I think that Marshall can do it at a better level than what McConnell can.
Yeah, and I guess we haven't seen him back from the knee injury. What I've just been preaching with the people is people are like ready to dump McConnell because they're saying he's not going to be the starter, and so I might as well pick up somebody else who's relevant at this point. I'm just saying just hold on. Just like, let's wait and see. You're probably right, but it's worth just finding out. Let's wait until it happens before you get rid of him, because he is valuable enough at this point to take that chance on, don't you think?
Of course, it's not like a D'Angelo Russell situation where if he was playing the way D'Angelo Russell is and you go, look, oh, he's barely 12 team valuable, and that's maybe a little bit better than Russell, but yeah, if he was that level and you go, and he's there's a chance that he's going to lose the job, then I'll stream the spot, I'll do whatever. But we're talking about a top 70 sort of player at the moment, and there's still a non-zero chance that, you know, that he keeps the starting role, and, you know, they cut Marshall or they cut Roten or someone like that, and they go, well, guys, we don't need you. We'll run with Cannon as a shooting point guard. We'll have McConnell and Marshall backing him up playing 10 minutes. There's a chance that happens. I don't think that it's a high chance, and it's not a over 50% chance, but there's still a chance. You have to keep holding him, definitely.
Yeah, and, you know, this is the only team he could start for, but, like, the good news is he's on that team. Like, it's Kendall Marshall. It's not Chris Paul. It's not Damian Lillard. It's not even D'Angelo Russell. You know what I mean? It's Kendall Marshall, who's been cut twice in the last 2 years. So if there's a job that TJ McConnell can win, it's this one. He's also another player who has broken my similarity scores. There has never been a TJ McConnell in the history of the NBA. Somebody who scores like so low compared to his assists and rebounds. He has kind of a high turnover percentage, so that hurts you in those sort of leagues. He's never taken a free throw, which has kind of become my podcast's favorite game, is when will TJ McConnell finally take a free throw?
But he was going to get one in the last few seconds of the game today. He drove under the basket. The Heat guys reached in and thought, it's happening, it's happening. he got around it, then he kicked it back out to Covington, I think it was. And I thought, it's never going to happen now. That was like the final. I thought, for sure, I'm like here going, if it's a foul. No, they didn't play it.
That's basically the funnest thing to watch for in the Sixers games at this point.
Pretty much, yeah. Or to see Nerlens Noel do something where you just go, what are you doing, in a good or a bad way?
Yeah, it goes either way with him, doesn't it?
It sure does.
Are there any other rookies that we haven't talked about that you want to mention?
For anyone who's listening in a deeper league, someone I would be paying a little bit of attention to is Norman Powell. He's getting 4 or 5 minutes a game at the moment, where you would have thought maybe he's not going to do that. And with rumors of DeMar DeRozan being traded at points during this season, Powell is a guy who has been really impressive throughout the preseason. And he'd be someone that, this is deep leagues only, but even if he works himself into 18 minutes or so as a backup, then he's worth having a look at, because I've been impressed with what he's done so far.
Mm-hmm. What about the Knicks point? Jerian Grant.
I'd stashed him for a bit in a 12-team league, but it's clear that Derek Fisher is going against common sense and he's playing Jose Calderon big minutes. Although in saying that, the Knicks are flying at the moment, so maybe Derek Fisher knows what he's doing. Calderon's playing the big minutes. There's no point with Jerian Grant at the moment with Calderon out there. It doesn't appear like.
Can you see him take that job over at some point this season, or do you think it's Langston Galloway's job to take?
I think if someone's taking it over, it will be Grant. But with the way that they're playing at the moment, and if they're continuing to push for the playoffs, and Calderon's playing serviceably, he's playing well, in fact. So I don't see it happening. What I would love, just play Jerian Grant at the two. Like, Aaron Aflalo is garbage. Like, I'm not into Aaron Aflalo at all. Grant's big enough to play the two. I think that he would be okay playing alongside Calderon for stretches. We haven't really seen it, but I think that he would be okay there. But I don't think he's really worth stashing. It's more like if something happens and he gets inserted into a starter and you miss him, I don't think you're going to be missing, you know, a top 50 breakout player or anything like that. You might miss a top 100 player, and yeah, whatever. It happens. It's not going to make or break your league. It's not like you're adding Hassan Whiteside last season.
What about Rondae Hollis-Jefferson? He's getting some run in Brooklyn and has, at least on the court, looked like a interesting player.
Yeah, he suffers from the same sort of issue as Willie Cauley-Stein. No offense. He had, I think, his first double-digit scoring game against the Celtics yesterday. Put up, you know, 11 rebounds as well. He's a rebound and steal sort of player. He's... Mm-hmm. Free throw percentage has been horrible, and his field goal percentage is probably higher than what we'd expect, but he just doesn't take enough attempts. He doesn't take enough shots. He's an okay streaming sort of player, but even in the you know, starters minutes he's currently getting, I don't think there's much use for him outside of like for specific needs.
Right. Anybody else we missed?
I think that the preseason hype on Miles Turner is going to find it hard to come to fruition, because they just haven't been giving him minutes and they've been happy with what Jan Mahinmi's doing. Paul George at the four. Jordan Hill played well again today. Lavoie Allen's had stretches. They've just got too many average bodies there that they're keeping Turner out of getting 25 minutes. And now that the injury is going to set him back as well.
Yeah, that's – I mean, anytime a rookie deals with an injury, it takes a –
it kills them. It kills their season.
It really does.
It takes them 3 months to get back into it.
Yep.
And forget about Miles Turner in pretty much most most redraft standard formats, or all redraft standard formats, I think.
RJ, last one I want to talk to you about. RJ Hunter is a guy who came up, I think, on our original podcast as somebody, I can't remember if you liked him. I know he was kind of high on my list with the caveat that I didn't think he was actually going to get playing time, and that's turned out to be true. What's your take on him at this point?
He's got more playing time than I anticipated, to be honest. He's at over 11 minutes a game. He's looked like a rookie. I think that's pretty mm-hmm. I own him in our Dynasty League. He's on my rookie squad, so I haven't even used him. I just don't think that it's even worth activating him off that rookie squad, even though he's got a salary of a dollar. I just don't. There's just too many other guards there. They'd need a long-term injury to Smart or Bradley or Isaiah Thomas for him to really start to have, or even, and Evan Turner. Those four guys are all ahead of him in the guard rotation.
That is one deep team. They always could make trades, though, so you never know where he's going to shake out.
Exactly.
All right, I think that's all I got for you, Josh. Do you have anything else you want to talk about before we wrap this thing up?
I don't think so. I think I'm done. I think we're good.
All right. Before we head out, is there anything you want to plug or anything you want people to come check out on any of your sites or podcasts or any place?
Obviously just my podcast, which I do every day. I live stream it on YouTube as well. So if you could subscribe to that, that would be awesome. And you can check out all the stuff at Basketball Monster, but I imagine most people listening to this podcast would be well aware of the existence of Basketball Monster at this point.
Yeah, I hope so. Awesome site though. If you don't know about it, go check it out. It is a subscriber site, but well worth the price of admission, if you ask me. And with that, I guess we'll just say thank you to everybody who has listened and tuned in. Appreciate your spending some time with us. Hope you have a good holiday season. If you're sitting around with your family and it's awkward and you're trying to find something else to do, log on to iTunes or Stitcher or something. Leave the podcast a rating and a review or hit subscribe. That always helps us.
With everyone's family all being together, you've got so many people's iTunes accounts that you can go in and take their phones and leave reviews. So you've got ample, probably 4 or 5 reviews all in one night with more. You know, I don't know how many people are coming around to listeners' houses, but you could have 20 people there. Grab everyone, phones in the middle of the table. Let's leave reviews for the Daily Fantasy Basketball Podcast.
Absolutely. That's my strategy, where most people say, tell your friends. I just say, take your friend's phone and leave a review.
Yep, exactly. And you're going to have a captive audience. So this is the perfect opportunity.
Yep. Get them drunk with the turkey, get them taking a nap, and then take their phones, download No Halftime, download the podcast, hit subscribe, hit rate and review. Have a good Thanksgiving. Everyone drive safe, and we'll be back on Sunday night, but Monday morning to talk about next week's setting your lineup. So until then, I hope you have a good time and we'll talk to you later. Thanks, guys. Bye.
See ya.